Thinking Liberty, Episode 2.
Welcome to Thinking Liberty, the podcast that explores lifestyles of freedom-minded individuals. Join us as we discuss work, hobbies, health, learning, and more while living a travel-orientated lifestyle. Be curious, be open, be inspired, be free. And now, here are your hosts, Zach and Sarah Varnell.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 2 of Thinking Liberty. We're coming to you from our mobile studio currently parked in St. Louis, Missouri. I'm Zach Varnell.
And I'm Sarah. And this episode's interview will be with Beth Picard. She is an avid cyclist and beer taster, and she stays active in her biking community, advocating for things such as more bike parking and showing others the joy of commuting by bike and also taking camping biking trips. She is on a self-stated mission to explore the world by bicycle and sample craft beer along the way. She has a blog titled Brew City Biker that we both love to follow. She covers craft beer, biking, and travel. And she recently returned from a five-month trip to Southeast Asia, Netherlands, and Belgium, which she will tell us more about later, where she cycled and toured in 11 countries, crossed 7 borders by bike, and rode 4,300 miles.
Yeah, a few notes about this episode. For one, I was on a work trip in Atlanta while Sarah was in St. Louis, and Beth was coming to us from Milwaukee. So it was a little bit new for us to be recording an episode where all three of us are remote,
and we had
a little bit of trouble.
We're still new to the whole podcasting thing, too.
Yeah. Anyway, we think it turned out pretty well, but you'll hear a little bit of a buzz when Beth is talking, and I'm going to try to get rid of it as much as I can. But just bear with us if you hear it. Just know that won't be on every episode, and it's really not even, you know, that noticeable. You know, we also had a power outage during the episode, so that was no fun, and we lost a little bit of the recording that way. But I think you guys are going to like it, and it's a really good episode.
Yeah, she had a lot of really good information for us, too. So it was really interesting and fun talking to her.
So, Sarah, what have you thought about St. Louis so far in the time we've had here?
Yeah, it's been pretty cool. Unfortunately, we've had a lot of rain, so we haven't been able to get out and do too much. But we're staying at a lakeside park, or that's the name. It's basically on a big pond, or I guess close to a lake.
Yeah, man-made lake. It's still cool though.
Yeah, and it has a great walking path all the way around it, and so we've been trying to get out on that every day when it's not too rainy, so we can walk all the way around and be outside in the nature.
Yeah, and unfortunately me having to go to Atlanta for work put a little bit of a dent into our, you know, tourism activities and things like that. But
I think we still got a lot in, so
yeah, it was a great time. Yeah. I've had fun here.
Yeah, so we went, of course, can't miss the arch. So we went to the arch and we rode the tiny little elevator up. Probably won't do that again, but it was definitely worth it for, you know, one visit to do.
Yeah, it was cool being at the top, and there's these tiny little windows to look out of. But out of the things we could see, you know, we were able to see a baseball game going on at the time.
Yeah, that was kind of neat. But yeah. We kind of joked that we were just going to sit there and get free seats, nosebleed seats, yeah, to the baseball game.
We also saw Kristen Chenoweth perform, which was nice. That was kind of a spur of the moment thing for us.
Yeah, we found out she was in town and we were like, oh, we have to go. And it was everything that I hoped that it would be and more. She is so funny and so talented. And of course, Zach looked over at me one time and was like, are you crying? And I'm like, you're surprised. Why? Her voice when she sings, it just, there's so much emotion in it, and she really tries to feel the songs, and you can tell that she's carefully selected what she wants to sing and what she wants to perform. And so of course, many times I was tearing up over the heartbreak and emotion in the songs, and I was only saved by her humor because she's so funny before the real tears would come.
She's a great singer, but really if she had a show where all she did was talk to the audience the whole time, I would probably go to that too, just because she was so funny and had great stories.
Yeah, she's a great storyteller. Yeah, I still need to get her a new album, but so we did that. And then we've also went out and we did our little own craft beer tasting. We tried St. Louis Red, and then we tried several of Schlafly's brews. And I'm not 100% sure that I'm saying that right, but I actually don't feel bad because I went to their website and they actually, the number one frequently asked question is, how do you pronounce the beer? So, and then we also tried Guava King by Four Hands Brewing, and I think that I enjoyed that one more than Zach did.
Yeah, although I like trying a little bit of everything, so no complaints here. So, and one of my favorite things to do as we travel around, as I've mentioned before, is to, you know, eat our way through a city, and especially when it comes to barbecue. So at St. Louis, of course, we had to try St. Louis style ribs. So we got those. It was a dry rub and it was really good ribs.
Yeah, I forget the name of the place we went to, though. We'll have to look that up and put it on the website.
I think it's probably pretty easy to find good barbecue. We saw a lot of highly rated barbecue restaurants, and I think we kind of just picked one at random, and that worked for us. And I know another thing, like during the Kristen Chenoweth concert, she was referencing this at the time, and we didn't even know really what she was talking about, but there's a pizza chain called Imo's, spelled IMO. And we ate there thinking it was going to be, you know, some, you know, kind of cheap, like Domino's or, you know, Papa John's
pizza.
It was
cheap. Price-wise.
Yeah, but it was really good. I was surprised at the quality of this, you know, chain of pizza, and I guess it's sort of a local St. Louis thing.
Yeah, that cheese.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, I wish I had that pulled up just so I can mention it. I'll definitely have to mention it in the outro, because I know I don't have Provol? This ready.
Yeah,
it might have been Provol. That was really good.
Supposedly, it's like a St. Louis local thing, too. It originated there. It's a combination of several different cheeses, like provolone and...
I don't know.
I forget what else.
The description was that it was a combination of cheeses, but doesn't taste like any of them. It tastes like its own thing. So that was great, having Provol and having that on a pizza. I guess a somewhat, you know, well-known and well-loved pizza chain in St. Louis was great.
Yeah, we definitely want to return, and hopefully, you know, when we're there next, we'll have a little bit of nicer weather and we can do a little bit more of downtown city exploring.
Well, that's it for our update. Let's go into the episode with Beth.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks again for joining us and being willing to share your adventures with us. Zach and I both follow you on Brew City Biker on your Facebook and your blog, and it's been really exciting and interesting to see all of your cycling adventures in the U.S. And then, of course, we were really excited for you when we saw that you were planning this Asian cycling adventure as well. So one thing that we've been really curious about is what kind of inspired the trip, and, you know, what kind of inspired you to select Asia and adventure and explore it on your bicycle.
Yeah, so I had been planning to actually go to the Benelux region for about 3 years now. So Holland, or Netherlands, and Belgium. But I just never had the time for it. And then with my job situation, I finally got enough time that I'd be able to spend an adequate amount of time touring. Because I originally decided I want to go from Amsterdam to Brussels and back. And 12 days was enough time to do that, but not enough time to fully explore it. And same goes for Asia. I've been dreaming of going cycle touring in Asia for a long time.
Cool. So we talked about it a little bit in the intro, but can you just tell us about your trip and what you did and where you visited, things like that?
Yeah. So I flew into Bangkok and I spent 3.5 months. Three of the months I was riding around, I rode through Thailand, Laos, Vietnam, and Cambodia. And then I also took transit and explored Malaysia and Singapore. And then I decided, instead of flying home, that I wanted to book a second leg of my journey. And I arrived in Amsterdam and I cycled toward through Amsterdam, doing a few different loops around and going all over the place and zigzagging through Belgium, into France, into Germany, and then back to Amsterdam. And it took 5 months total. I had 6 weeks then in Europe.
Wow, that's a lot. That's really exciting.
Yeah.
So when you started out this trip, you had a cycling partner that you started out with. Can you tell me a little bit about what was that like, having somebody with you? And then I know the last leg of your journey, you guys went separate paths. So what was it like to be a solo cyclist in another country?
Yeah, so we had worked it out that I met this guy through a cycle touring website, and we had joined up in Bangkok, and we were going to tour for 3 months through Asia. And then he was great to tour with, but then he decided he was going to bike back to Europe. So we split up at that point, and
so
I rode.
You weren't quite ready to go to Europe yet.
Yes. No, not quite ready to bike all the way to Europe. No. then I was touring in Vietnam, and I was mostly alone. I met up with a guy that I met on the road, but we only toured for 4 days together. I got in the zone more when I was alone, and when you're riding alone, you just keep going, and you don't need to stop as much for the other person. You can ride as hard as you want. You can, it's very freeing. There's definitely some bonuses, though, to being with another person and sharing the adventure.
Yeah, that's really cool that you were able to see the positives of both, though, since you did a lot by yourself, but then also a lot with other people.
Yeah.
So were you familiar with these countries before you went, or is this the first time you've been to some of them?
It was the first time that I had been to all of the countries that I was in, except for France and Germany. Wow. Yeah. Lonely Planet. That was my familiarity.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I like that website, too. They have some good articles and resources there.
Yeah, there's also some cycle touring websites out there where you can look at other people's routes and see which way they took to get through Asia.
Do you know those off the top of your head?
I used Crazy Guy on a Bike. It's exclusively for people to share their routes with other people and then log where they stopped along the way. And then they also have like a classified section, which is how I met my cycle touring buddy that I began my adventure with.
That's really cool. Yeah, I know you mentioned earlier that you used one of those websites to find your partner. Were there any other resources or tools that you used to help plan this adventure?
I also used some of my friends from back home to give me some tips. My friends Berta and Mike in Milwaukee, they've gone on a lot of bike tours in Southeast Asia, so they were an invaluable resource.
So was this kind of a picking these countries, you just went off a map that you found, or did you specifically pick these countries and plan it yourself?
Yeah, it was, I knew where I wanted to go, and then I'm a big fan of, like, the DIY bike tour, and just started looking at websites for routes, but most of the time, I didn't have a route in mind until, like, a month before I entered a country.
So, I guess going back several steps, how did you even get started on this sort of lifestyle where you can, you know, go travel for 5 months?
Yeah, so I work for an active travel company. And before that, I've done a lot of work in the bike industry. And this winter, I decided that I wanted to travel instead of working. And I had the money and the time. So I went. And yeah.
So is your company just, you know, cool with you taking a bunch of time off and coming back, or are you doing this between jobs?
Yeah, so the company I work for, it's Backroads, so we're employed through them, we're not contracted, and then we can choose when we want to work. Outside of the summer, there's less work in the winter.
So you guys work like in seasons or, I guess, sessions. You do like a summer tour or a winter tour or fall tour for them, and then you can decide if you want to take the next tour off or something?
Correct, yeah. You can decide when you want to work.
That's really awesome.
So I know that the reason we know you is because you met a friend of ours in Europe when you were traveling before. So how long have you been doing this? Just kind of, you know, backpacking and cycling and just traveling around wherever you feel like.
Yeah, it was actually when I was in Europe meeting that mutual friend of ours. That was the first time that I traveled for a long time. It was a month that I was there doing a train trip through four different countries in Europe. And I got really addicted to it.
Yeah, it sounds like it. From a month in Europe to 5 months in Europe and Asia, so.
Yeah. But it's not really that much of a big jump because, especially for cycle touring, people are very hesitant to go. And I feel like if you've done a week of cycle touring, you can do months. I think the same goes for regular travel.
So do you think your experience with leading bike tours here in the U.S. helped you a lot over in Asia, or was it a completely new experience?
Well, planning a tour for yourself is different than planning a tour for a company. When you're planning a tour for yourself, you don't have to be very strict about things, especially if you have a tent or a credit card, to just be able to decide, I'm going to stay here for the night. I don't need a reservation or anything.
Cool. So tell us, what was probably your best experience from this trip?
Oof. Yeah. So many. It's really tough when you travel for this long to pick just one. But something that stood out to me was riding my bike in Laos. I think I had a really different experience than most people have in Laos because I was on a bicycle. And it was really special because you would be riding through the mountains, through these little villages, like Hmong villages, and the kids were amazing. They would come up to you and they'd be waving and saying hi and giving you high fives. It was the best sort of feeling.
So did any of these Asian countries have a big bicycle culture where you met natives kind of doing the same thing?
Yeah, in Thailand, there's a lot of people who road ride. In Laos, it's mostly kids that use bikes to get around. In Cambodia, it's the same, kids. In Vietnam, it's kids, but it's also women. And people who work in fields, like the rice fields.
So was it pretty easy for you to, you know, communicate, even though you're going through all these different countries that speak different languages and, you know, it's probably impossible to learn them all that quickly? Were you still be able to get around and get food and all that pretty easily?
It's a lot of pointing and a lot of gesturing, but you do learn words. You have to, when you're a cycle tourist, you have to learn words like rice, like cow, or chicken, guy. And then you can start to order food.
Yeah, when we were in Japan, there was a lot of gesturing, and then I learned to say, basically, I need this. And then I would just do that and point at things. And, you know, I felt a lot cooler doing that than gesturing, even though it was maybe a tiny bit better. But So another thing I saw you mention on Facebook is that you use Dutch. So is that something you kind of learned on the fly as you were in, I'm blanking. So in the Netherlands, that's right.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because the country is the Netherlands, but sometimes people say Holland, which is actually only a small part of the Netherlands. However, sometimes Dutch people use it to describe their own country. I learned some Dutch. I like learning just a little bit from each country. But there was just something about Dutch that I found interesting, because a lot of English words are actually taken from Dutch. So as I was learning it, it just seemed a little bit easier and more approachable than some languages.
Yeah, I've heard that it differs from something like French, where they'll make a word their own, where, you know, maybe they'll just take the English word and start using it, like maybe internet or something that started out probably as an English word. Instead of making it into a Dutch word, they'll just say internet, for instance. So I've heard it's one of the more easy languages for a English speaker to learn.
I've heard that as well, yeah.
So I guess when you were in France, you'd been there before. Did you remember any of the French you had used? Or?
It started coming back to me just as I was about to leave, actually. But they also speak French in southern Belgium as well.
Okay.
In Wallonia. So
which country had the best beer?
Definitely not Asia. Belgium, hands down.
Okay. Yeah. I'll definitely have to add that to my to-do list.
Yeah.
Please do.
So, you know, 5 months is a long time to be traveling and on the road. Did you have any, like, terrible experiences that you really felt like you learned a lot from?
I try not to bash Vietnam too much, but I didn't really have... I had some bad experiences in Vietnam. I had some money stolen from me. Yeah, it's one of those experiences where almost everybody who travels during their life, they have money stolen, and you just need to look beyond it and have a good attitude about it, I guess.
Yeah, and make sure that it doesn't stop you from wanting to travel in the future.
Yeah. But I guess the main things I didn't like about Vietnam was, as a cycle tourist, it's a lot of motorbikes. There's a lot of motorbikes in Southeast Asia, but especially in Vietnam, it's a lot of drivers on the road, which equals a lot of honking, a lot of crazy truck drivers, a lot of buses.
Yeah. So you said there was a cool picture that you shared when you were wrapping up the end of your journey, where you said you... cycle toured in 11 countries, crossed 7 borders, and you rode over 4,300 miles on your bike. So 7 border crossings is a lot. Did you have any difficult or interesting experiences while crossing?
Oh, well, yeah, I've crossed. So in Asia, I crossed Thailand to Laos, Laos to Vietnam, and then Vietnam to Cambodia. And the most memorable one was Laos to Vietnam. I had to climb up a mountain to go over the border. And on the Laotian side, it was sunny and hot, maybe like 80 degrees. And when I got to the top, when I started getting to the top, I could see these trucks coming down, and their windshields were splattered with water. And I thought to myself, okay, those are not clouds. It's raining up there. And I start climbing, and I get rained on, and I get soaked, and it was cold. But once I got, like, stamped through into Vietnam, it was an interesting descent. there was lots of potholes, but fortunately there was not a lot of traffic. My hands were so cold. By the time I got halfway down, it was like a 10-mile descent, and I just thought to myself, you are not cold right now. It is colder back home in America than you are right now.
So with going through like all these weather changes and stuff, you said you got soaked. Were you able to like stop somewhere and change clothes, or did you have weatherproof equipment with you to carry things with you?
Yeah, most of the time I didn't get soaked because I have rain gear, and I have waterproof bags on my bike. That's one of the common questions. How do you carry your stuff on your bike? I didn't deal with weather too much in general, but I've gotten used to riding in the rain and what that entails.
Yeah, I know you've mentioned before that you did like a camping trip in the mountains on your bicycle. How do you pack for something like that? And then even more, how do you pack for something like a 5-month trip on your bike?
It's a lot of wool. And you really have to be selective about what you're bringing. You have to think, am I going to use this item? How much am I going to use it? You don't get to be very glamorous when you're cycle touring.
Not a lot of makeup or high heels.
No makeup, no high heels, no jewelry. Just basically it makes you think about what do you need to survive and what do you need to be comfortable as well, though, because I definitely have items that I bring that other people don't bring, and maybe some people would think they're crazy, but I'm a writer, so I always have a journal with me.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty important. Do you have a weight limit that you try to stick to when you're packing for something like this?
Yeah. I don't really know. I don't really weigh my bags, but I know how much things weigh. Yeah, let's just say that.
You just know what feels right.
Yeah, yeah. I know how much feels right.
Yeah.
And I know how big my bags are and how much I can practical to bring.
So now that you're back in the States, do you have any other things kind of in the back of your mind that you might be looking forward to or starting to plan?
Oh, I've always got things that I'm planning. Yeah. These dreams. I have dream bicycle tours and dream trips. As far as bicycles, I would love to bike tour in Colombia and South America, Peru, Argentina.
Well, we know some people in Argentina that you could hang out with if you get down.
Oh, cool. Yeah, because you guys were down there, weren't you?
Yeah, with some coworkers of ours.
Ah, great.
If somebody was interested in getting started bike touring, is there, you know, some advice you would give? Do they need to be pretty proficient bikers already or cyclists already? Maybe get started around their home and then branch out? Or how would you do that?
Well, that's kind of one of the misconceptions, that you need to be like super in shape before you leave. And I think it's important that you are realistic about how far you want to go. And if you're planning on riding 50 miles every day during a bike tour, you should have done at least that much in the past. And I think the thing that is the most important is that you're riding consistently. So it's not like you're riding like one ride on the weekend and then of like 70 miles and then assume like, okay, I'm good to ride 50 miles each day. You need to ride days in a row. But you can do that on a bike tour too. If you're going to be gone for 2 weeks, by week two, you're good to go. But it's just less comfortable when you don't have the miles ahead of time.
Okay, so I know for shorter trips, you probably have your own bicycle with you the whole time. For this trip, did you take your own bike with you the whole time throughout Asia and Europe, or were you renting or borrowing bikes as you went?
I did. I brought my bike from America. My bike's pretty special because it has these things called couplers, which allow you to break your bike frame into two pieces. And the good thing about that is that you can pack it in a suitcase that's airline regulation, and it weighs under the pounds regulation as well. So you can fly with your bike for free as long as they know it's not a bike.
Oh, nice. So what did you do with your suitcase when you got to your destination?
So that's the tough part about having a bike with couplers, is that you have a suitcase that you need to return to at the end of your journey. And so I left my bag in Bangkok, and then I picked it up once I did a loop. And then when I was in Europe, I started and left from Amsterdam and packed it up.
And things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sometimes if you're doing from point A to point B instead of from point A to point A, you can ship your suitcase, but you have to want to go. I think it's easier to go in a loop if you have a bike with couplers.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. I think that's probably a really helpful piece of information for people who want to do touring, too.
Yeah, but you don't need a fancy bike either. A lot of people just take the bike boxes that bike shops have laying around and pack up their bike and go. And certain airlines you have to check with the airline prices. Sometimes it can cost upwards of like $200 US. But on other airlines, you can pay as low as $75 or $50 to fly with your bike.
Okay.
So what overall piece of advice do you think you would have for somebody who just wants to live a more travel-oriented lifestyle? And, you know, whether it's biking or hiking or train tours or anything, just get out there and start doing this stuff when they're not already.
Well, people have a lot of excuses as far as why they're not going to do things. And most of it relates to work and having the time to do it, because bicycle touring or hiking, especially through hiking, can take a long time. So I think you just need to demand it and prioritize it. But as far as actively traveling, there's so many good resources out there. And if you have a friend who bike tours or hikes or goes on a trip, it's that you're interested in, it's more, they're probably really willing to share what they think about their travels.
So was this something that you kind of engineered for yourself? Like when you got your employment with Backroads, was that on purpose, knowing that you'd be able to travel more, or did you kind of fall into that?
No, that part kind of came by chance. Like I didn't start planning a trip for winter until October.
So you're in Wisconsin right now, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Visiting family?
Yes.
And then where does your work take you next?
I am headed to Salt Lake City for training.
Okay. Will you be doing touring there or just training and then moving on to another location?
Training and then I'm going to be placed somewhere.
Okay. That's really awesome. Yeah, if you have time, you know, later on or next summer or the summer sometime, we'd love to talk to you again and get more information about your smaller tours that you do here in the U.S. and just learn more about those experiences.
Yeah, I'd love to share with you.
Okay. And then I already mentioned that you have your blog, Bruce City Biker. If somebody wanted to follow you or even reach out to get more information, is that the best location for them to reach out to you, or is there somewhere else?
Yes. Yeah. BruceCityBiker.com. And then I'm also on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram.
What are your handles for Instagram and Twitter and all that?
Bruce City Biker on Facebook, Bruce City Biker on Instagram, and Bruce City Biker 1 on Twitter. Somebody had to have my username, but
same thing has happened to us for this podcast. So.
No, yeah, the Bruce City Biker name actually came from the nickname that the city I was living in for 4 years, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, was known as the. Or it's a nickname for Milwaukee, Brew City.
Cool.
Because of the brewing history with Miller and Pabst and Schlitz and Blatz.
Well, it seems to combine all your interests, too. You got beer, exploring cities, and biking all in one, so.
Yeah, when I was starting out my blog, I decided, do I have enough to write if I just write about cycling? Do I have enough to write if I just write about beer? And then I decided, okay, why not write about both of them?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's really awesome, and we're looking forward to keep following you and reading more about your next adventures.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, right. So that's it for this episode 2. Be sure to follow Beth. BruceCityBiker.com is her blog, and then BruceCityBiker for both Facebook and Instagram. And then she's actually BruceCityBiker1 on Twitter if you want to check her out there. And then be sure to check us out too. You can check out this podcast show notes at thinkingliberty.com/2, and that'll give you our show notes. We'll have a couple links on there for you as well. And then you can look us up, ListenTL, for both Facebook and Twitter. So be sure to check us out there. And thanks so much for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Thinking Liberty. Subscribe to the show for free on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher at thinkingliberty.com. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, articles by Zach and Sarah, and more. We'll see you next time.